previously on the prompt.
So I wanted to try to iTunes Match because I was curious.
So you but moved. I couldn't.
No, I didn't move because, you know, healthcare. So anyway.
what?
Anyway, I wanted to try iTunes Match.
Welcome to The Prompt, a weekly panel discussion on technology and the culture surrounding Apple and related companies.
It is January the 2nd, 2014. Happy New Year to you. This is episode 29 of the world's greatest podcast. My name is Mike Hurley, and I am joined by Mr. Stephen Hackett. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Michael.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And Federico Vitici, Happy New Year.
Hey, Mike. Buon anno.
I was hoping you'd do that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I should have looked
it
up.
He just said banana in Italian. That's all it was.
No. I didn't say banana.
I like the way you say banana. Banana.
Banana.
I'm banana, banana.
Come on. Come on, you guys. It's buon anno.
Buon anno.
Yeah.
What a great way. What a great way to start the first episode of the year.
We're talking about New Year's and bananas. So.
banana.
Mike, I'm proud of you. You did 2014 in one take.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty good, right?
You know how people, like, you know, you write 2013? Like, I'll be writing it on paperwork for, like, a month. But I guess, though, it is easier for you to say because of your issues with the TH combination.
Oh, I'm so happy that I don't have 2013 anymore. I've just got 2014. Although, I'll probably start saying 2013, but I'll deal with that when it happens.
It's an ongoing struggle. Speaking English.
Is everyone having a good year so far?
Kinda.
I've been testing the new year for a couple of days, and I have to say it's been okay.
Yes. So, I was having dinner with friends, and at midnight, there were fireworks. So, Mike, you should listen to me.
I am listening to you.
There were fireworks. So we went outside. And I didn't think about putting my jacket back on, so I went outside with just a shirt, and now I'm sick.
Federico,
do you have pneumonia? Yeah.
No, oh Jesus, no!
Because that's what you get from being in the cold.
No, not necessarily.
Yes.
No, I'm just a little sick.
Being cold and being out in the cold, like germs and viruses and bacteria, cause illness. Not.
Being cold, like out in the cold, causes sickness. Come on.
What kind of
that.
Sickness?
You shouldn't go outside in December with just a t-shirt.
Well, yes, but not... There will be several links in the show notes refuting your claim.
So you don't wear...
Oh,
like
God. I started searching on Google, does being cold make you sick? And like the fourth one down is make you lose weight. So that might also be in the show notes.
Okay, so maybe I'm weird, but I'm actually sick right now. But the fireworks were nice.
Good.
And we had a nice dinner, too.
Your sickness could have just come from partying too much and therefore lowering your immune system, therefore making you more susceptible to germs.
Right. And being cold and it being dark does make you more susceptible because your immune system is a little depressed. But suppressed, not depressed. It's not sad.
I have a really depressed immune system. Oh, I loved last year.
So they're going to be... I'm just going to keep putting links in.
Please just stop at two. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, the third one was a slideshow.
What do they call them now? What are those articles called? It's a new word. Like when it's like a slideshow as well. Is it Slidercore or something? What do people call those things?
What'd you do for New Year's, Michael?
Partied with some friends. Went to a nightclub and saw a rock show.
The Beatles playing.
Yes. It's the only band we have here. What about you, Stephen? Did you watch any fireworks?
No.
Did you shoot any guns?
No, I don't own a gun.
I don't know.
My wife and I have dinner with the same kind of group of friends every year, so we did that, and they came home, and after the kids went to bed, we watched The Matrix, and then we're in bed by 11.
Do you guys play? Do you guys play bingo for New Year's Eve?
No. Is that a thing?
Yeah, because in Italy we have this game called Tombola, which is basically bingo, mm-hmm. only with the family. And like you, like when I was a kid, so everybody, you can either put some money on the table, or you can put some goods. And when I was a kid, I won a ham, an entire ham.
And could you take a picture of that? Show us.
Oh yeah, sure. Because
where is it?
Let me find it on Google.
I assume you still don't have the ham.
No, because I was it's like 10 years ago.
Unless it was a prized ham.
So, here's the picture. See? That's like prosciutto, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I won one for the tombola, for the bingo. And I was so happy. Because I never win at games, these kind of games. So I thought that maybe you guys had this kind of tradition too, playing bingo for New Year's Eve.
I do often give lunch meat to my family members.
That's not meat. That's prosciutto, which is another thing. But anyway, that's like a really nice prize.
It's a vegetable in Italy, Stephen. That's what you don't understand.
That's a banana.
Banana.
We should do some follow-up.
I think that's probably a good idea.
We have a fair amount of it, as you might imagine, after our music conversation. The first one, Justin North sent in via Twitter, and he links out to noisetrade.com. And did you guys poke around this a little bit? It's
no. I didn't have time. I'm sorry.
It's pretty cool. Basically, you can listen to free music, and the idea is that basically that they can, like, the musicians put on shows based on where these downloads are. So kind of what we talked about, like Iron Maiden, but yeah. In a second we'll talk about Iron Maiden again.
But it was, yeah, in reference to, we were talking about Iron Maiden playing shows where they found there was illegal downloads. Allegedly.
Right. Yeah. Turns out that was incorrect, but
we'll get to that.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Nice looking website. So the idea is that, you know, let your music stand on its own. And if people like it, they will book you for a show or come to a show. So I guess we can, I'm going to go out of order, Michael. The next thing is, came to us from a lot of people, but, Mr. Chris J. Wilson on Twitter, I think it has the tweet of record to an article over at TechCrunch saying how basically the Iron Maiden story we quoted was completely
falsified,
inaccurate.
It was too good to be true.
Yeah.
So basically just not true, just straight up false. So that's something.
But it's a nice idea anyway.
It's a nice idea. Which really, when I think of Iron Maiden, I think of soft, good ideas. So, I guess
are nice guys, so they might as well try this plan.
Maybe we can just pretend they did.
Maybe the internet just gave them the best idea ever. So now they will actually do it. I don't know.
We can live in hope.
I want to see Iron Maiden.
Start touring their music and see if they show up.
the police might show up. Yeah, one of the La Policia.
It's La Polizia, by the way.
Oh,
why am I teaching you Italian today? I don't know.
Because you should teach me Italian every day.
Is it like a New Year's resolution for you to learn Italian?
No, it's one for you to teach me.
Okay.
So up next, we talked about RDO obviously last week, and we failed to mention that they had a video streaming service.
I don't know if we failed to mention it. Oh, right. We didn't pimp them enough. We didn't give them enough press.
And because we didn't mention them, their video streaming service is out of business now. So, way to go, guys.
That was such a letdown. I was so excited when it launched because I thought it was going to be like...
Yeah. Did you get a credit?
Yeah, I never used it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone did. They just launched it in April. Like, it's only been around like 8 months and it's already gone.
So basically, yeah. For anybody that doesn't know what... I assume it's called Video, right? Video.
That's how I say it.
It was basically a new releases movie purchasing and renting platform. It's not what you'd have expected from RDO, which was a subscription service. Because I thought it was going to be subscriptions for new releases, which I've always wanted. But right. That doesn't exist anywhere. So basically, it was the same prices as like iTunes, but you couldn't download the files. You could only stream them or download them within the Video app. And there was no intrinsic benefit at all to using this other than any other service that exists like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing special about it.
Which explains why it didn't even last a year.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that they wanted this to be like audio, like the music service, but they couldn't because, I mean, like you said, Mike, there's no streaming service for new TV show releases. So I think that they made the bad decision to launch anyway,
yeah.
And nobody cared. It was just a bad product. It was basically useless because if you want to pay for, for a TV show, for a movie, you just go to iTunes and you can download it. Or maybe you go, I don't know, does Amazon sell movies directly?
I think so.
Yeah, or you go to iTunes or other services. Anyway. Why should I go? And yeah. Plus, this video, I'm pretty sure that it only worked on the iPad. There was some iOS limitation, I guess.
Yeah, it worked on the web in a web browser as well, naturally.
Yeah. It just made no sense. I'm surprised it lasted 8 months.
It probably didn't.
Yeah.
You know, but they've just now made the decision.
They just made the announcement, yeah.
Yeah, like, it, I'm sure that it... I would be surprised if it was ever profitable in any way, like, or even close to it, because I don't see... I can imagine that stuff is really expensive to do, just on the contracts alone.
You know? But, I mean, can you imagine a mix of RDO and Netflix that worked anywhere in the world with no regional restrictions?
But more than that, just with new stuff. Not old catalog stuff,
yeah.
New stuff. That's the real sort of key.
Yeah, that's the dream. Because I would pay so much.
So would I.
Just to, yeah.
Like a stupid amount of money, but no one's ever going to do it. Because
stupid Hollywood.
Stupid, stupid Hollywood.
So Federico, you had two items in here. You want to talk about this French music service?
Oh yeah, I was recommended this by a reader or listener of the show. Oh, Frederick Rodriguez.
Rodriguez?
Is it French or Spanish? It's French, so it must be Frederick. I don't know.
Rodriguez.
So, Rodriguez. Rodriguez. I don't know. So,
Freddy Rod.
Freddy French. So, Freddy French recommended this music service. It's called, oh God, another French name. It's Cobus. What do you think, Mike? Is it Cobus?
I would say Cobus, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a French music service to download and stream music. And what's nice about this is that they have CD quality and studio master quality for songs. So you get the best quality of any service that we talked about last week. So the problem is that it's only limited to French people.
No.
Yeah. Well, no. the website is French.
Well, it's telling me that their unlimited music subscriptions are available in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
So I can press a button and now it's all in English. On a much better looking website.
I don't have.
That's because you don't speak English in Italy. Obviously.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great looking website, actually. The entire website has changed.
Are we looking at the same website?
Yeah.
Mike?
Yeah, seriously.
Are you sure?
100%.
Do you see music?
Okay, go to qobuz.com/gb-en. See if that brings it up for you.
I translated mine into Korean with Chrome. And
that's a bad idea.
Now it's all in Korean.
Yeah, like I can pay £9.99 a month. I might look at this.
Do you see apps? Do you see, like, if you scroll to the bottom, do you see like tabs for music quality and in 24 bits?
So it's taken me to a brand new website, so it doesn't look like the one that you're looking at. But if I go down, I have 320 kilobit per second guaranteed on the £9.99, or I can get FLAC 16 bits.
FLAC, seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
For $19.99 a month.
Uh-huh.
And that's unlimited music everywhere, so that's... Oh, that's how you do the offline. Oh no, even the $9.99 is offline.
Huh. So this is a nice.
I'm gonna look at this.
Yeah, I never heard of this before, and I don't know if. Oh yeah, I think they have apps because I see an image on the right side of the website.
They do.
With an iPhone and an iPad, so they must have something.
They even have Windows and Kindle and Sonos.
So see, and Kindle.
And Kindle, yeah.
Oh, like the Kindle
Fire.
Yeah.
It plays on Kindle e-readers. No, it doesn't.
You know, we have had that mispronunciation on the show before, like Kindle Keynote. I said like crazy deja vu about that.
You said Kindle Keynote.
Yeah, well,
Kindle Keynote.
Where it sounds like Federico says Keynote, but he says Kindle.
Oh, huh.
That's happened before.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable.
This could be really good. I need to try and take a look at what they're...
Yeah, Mike, you should report back next week.
All right, I can do that. It's only going to cost me £20. So no problem, guys.
Well, £20 is like, it's like five in US.
It's about $5,000.
That seems right. The next piece of follow-up is from Rob Myers on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, and it's totally right because it's...
It
basically... said that we didn't mention smart playlists last week in the show, and he's
someone did.
Who did?
I talked about it with iTunes Match.
Oh,
yeah, then but we didn't mention that all these new music streaming services, they don't give you the possibility to create smart playlists using criteria like artist name on ear or maybe I don't know ratings. So they don't have any of this, which would be great. But you know, you just can you can only drop songs and maybe albums between playlists, which is something I use playlists. I subscribe to playlists by other people, but you know, smart playlists in iTunes, they're a very nice feature, especially because they sync with iCloud. So I create some playlists on the Mac and I can have them on the iPhone. And it would be nice to have them on audio and Spotify.
Sure. And I mean, and what Rob's talking about, like his example in his blog post, is he's got a 500 megabyte playlist of music that he listened to when he was a teenager. And it's a lot of, he was a very sad teenager, very angry, it looks like. But a way to make like a mixtape or like a, you know, like a random like party CD or something. And that's great. And, you know, I'm not a huge, like, I think I kind of like grumbled when you guys were talking about playlists. Like, I don't enjoy my music that way. I want to listen to an album front to back, like a grown up. But, I'm in the minority there. A lot of people like, you know, things like iTunes Radio and Pandora are so popular because they want to kind of stay within the same genre of music and just listen to a bunch of different stuff. And, like you're saying, you can do that like in Spotify and RDO, but not really. You kind of have to do it manually. And so this is it's a great point, and it's one that we, I'm definitely glad that someone brought up. So,
you know what's a nice implementation of smart playlists? And I'm sure that Mike will like this. So if you plan on going to a concert, and if you want to get an idea of what a band will play, I usually go to this website. It's called setlist.fm. So you can basically look up any artist and you can see the latest concert dates of the the venue name, and you can see the date and you can see the set list. So the list of the songs that they usually play.
Ooh.
So when I went to Bologna to see Biffy Clyro, I built a smart playlist in iTunes. And so I went to setlist.fm and I looked up the most recent dates. So I saw the songs, I created a playlist, and iTunes, of course, respects the order of the songs when it syncs the playlist back to the iPhone. So when we were driving, we would play the playlist. So at the concert, we knew roughly the order of the songs because we were prepared.
That's a life hack.
Hmm.
No, that's cool. I like that. I've never heard of this website. I'll put that in the show notes too. Stephen.
Hi.
Stephen.
Michael.
Where can you find the show notes?
Federico. In the Google document that we're sharing.
Okay, for people that aren't us.
No, we can open to the public. It will.
I don't want to do that again.
5x5.television
TV
/prompt/29.
Or your favorite website.
Theprom.pt/29.
Okay. Guys, I've just signed up for a Kubuz account. Kobuz. First, we need to find out how to say this. Let me get to
We're really bad at French names.
Yeah, we need to.
Which is
to
the last bit of follow
French.
Up that I've been avoiding so I don't have to pronounce the app's name.
Oh, the FAQ is all in French. That's not helping.
I told you that the name is acute.
Man, look at the screenshots in this.
I put it in the show. Didn't I?
What?
I found the guy. I've actually had somebody say that I was right as well, but. You know, whatever.
The moral of the story is no one knows how to speak French. It's a dead language like Latin.
We should use the Duolingo app to learn French.
But Mike's busy learning Italian.
Si.
Mike is always learning a new language.
I'm always trying to learn English.
Because he has to use it with the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
So si. He knows many.
Si, senor.
Oh, senor is man.
I know. It's another language I'm learning.
Oh, Mike.
So the 2.1, version 2.1 is out.
Yeah.
And did we talked about like up next in queue management on iOS, right? And how you wanted it in the music app in the future. And now it's here in this lovely third-party app.
Yeah.
Federico, did you know this was coming before when you said that last
week? No, I had no idea.
You hadn't been testing it for a couple of weeks?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Mike, but I
maybe they added it after the show.
Maybe
I don't know.
I doubt it. I don't know. It's a pretty big feature.
It's a nice feature, especially because it lets you like you can reorder songs and you can delete them from the queue. But I don't like it because completely because it uses the system music picker. So like it's kind of weird because when you are in the queue and you tap the plus button to add a new song, so this music screen comes up and it kind of, you know, it kind of clashes with the queue because it's two completely different UIs. So the developers said that they are working on their own music picker. So hopefully it's coming with 2.2. I don't know.
Yeah,
go on.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But now that I have, I mean, is that a limitation? Like, we talked about how in iOS 7, like, this app, like, no third-party app can actually control the music player, or, like, they just control the music player, but it's still in charge? Like, is that a limit? Is that sort of a limitation?
No, music apps can control music without... So this is kind of complex to explain with words. Basically, music apps can control music... without using the music app by Apple, only if they don't want to control iTunes match media that you haven't downloaded yet. So Acute is able to stream songs from iTunes match because in the background it uses the Apple music app.
Okay.
For the music picker, I think my understanding is that the media framework lets you create your own music picker with queue management features. It's just not easy to do. So I think that the Acute developers, to get this, you know, on the App Store, they just use the default picker, but they are working on their own, but it takes time.
Cool.
Everything takes time.
This is a nice wisdom.
That's my New Year's. My other New Year's resolution is just to provide wisdom at intervals.
You should provide wisdom in French.
I tell you how I'm going to provide you with some wisdom, Federico.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what you need to build a website.
Another one?
I don't know if you know how to build websites, but if you don't, I have the perfect place for you.
Okay.
Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own website. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TALLYHO12. Squarespace is constantly updating their platform with new features, new designs, and making their support even greater. They have fantastic, beautiful templates for you to start with, and they give you loads of cool style options that you can tweak, so you can add cool fonts. They use Typekit fonts and Google fonts. You can change some of the colors of the site. You can easily drag and drop elements around on the pages. And this all allows you to create and craft your own space on the internet. Squarespace take care of everything. They have rock solid hosting. They take care of SEO for you to make sure that your site is searchable in the interweb. They even make sure that your site looks fantastic on any device, as every template features responsive web design. It's really easy to use, but if you need any help, they have over 70 dedicated employees based in New York City on the customer care team who even have been working through the holidays because they just care about you at Squarespace. And they also care about design. Not only do they have fantastic templates, as I mentioned, it shows throughout their whole site, from their public-facing website, so you can go to squarespace.com when you're signing up. You'll be able to see the awesome website that they put together, which has loads of examples of different types of people and how they use Squarespace. But they also have a fantastic back-end system, the admin panel and where you post and see your stats and stuff. That all looks beautiful. They also have some fantastic iOS apps. They have Squarespace Blog, which allows you to post to your site on the go. And it's fully integrated with their page building system. It allows you to easily format text or markdown. You can tap and drag images around. And they also have Squarespace Metrics, which allows you to see your website analytics. And it gives you projections and charts for that too. As I said earlier, you can try Squarespace for free. There's no credit card required to go and try it out. So go see if it's right for you. I'm sure that it will be. And if you decide to purchase, it starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year or more. And make sure that you get 10% off and support the prompt by using the code TALLYHO12. That's TALLYHO12. Thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and the prompt.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hi,
I'm Mike.
I'm Steven.
Hello, Steven.
Ciao, sono Federico.
Oh, hello. Ciao, Federico.
Your Italian tutor is here. So the topic today, actually, it comes from an article, Federico, that you wrote in November.
And we've been waiting for a week where there's no news to discuss.
So you've been reading my article for a few months now.
Do you know what? I read your article yesterday, and I really liked it.
For the first time, I'm sure.
No, it was, well, the first time I glanced at it, there was no video, so I couldn't really, you know.
So this is your first impressions with my article.
But yesterday, whilst feeling a little bit sorry for myself for New Year's, I decided to read your article before I went to sleep last night, Federico. So,
Thank you.
You had
someone tweeted that the problem with our show is now that they read Mac stories in your voice.
I don't think that's a problem. I think that's a good thing.
So yeah,
I mean, my traffic has been good, so I'm not sure that's a problem.
I think it's great.
Yeah, it gives the site a little bit of personality.
Guys,
I should put up some Italian flags on the
you maybe should.
In the navigation.
Like a flash popover.
I'm currently opening Qobuz desktop installer.pkg.
So. Don't install software while we're recording a show.
Hey, it's a different machine, no problem. I'm a professional. I have a production machine. I'm installing this on my Retina MacBook Pro, which is just running everything else. It's no biggie.
So your story is about you leaving Google Chrome to go back to Safari. And we can talk about that specifically, but we're going to use it as a launch way to launch into the launch pad. Talk about Chrome and Google and Gmail and maybe why some people are leaving it and why some other people are not leaving it. How was that?
That was a great intro. So Federico, maybe you should dive in a little bit here and talk to us about not just why you left Google Chrome, but also kind of why doing this has also made you rethink why you left some Google services. Give us a bit of background before we dive into our own personal opinions on such matters.
Well, there are a few reasons. The first one is that after the first iOS 7 beta, I wanted to try Safari again. So my history with web browsers is the following. When I got my first Mac in 2008, I was a Firefox user because I came from Windows PCs and you know, Firefox was very popular back then. So I used Firefox for a couple of years on my Mac. And then I started to, you know, to kind of jump around browsers. There was my Safari moment when I was, you know, I was very excited to switch back to Safari. And then I went back to Firefox, and eventually I even used Opera for a couple of weeks, I think. That didn't end well. And then I switched to Google Chrome because Google released this new browser and everybody was raving about Google Chrome. So I switched to Google Chrome and I fell in love completely with Chrome on the Mac. It wasn't the most Mac-like application. It's always been kind of weird in the way that it displays tabs and other UI elements, especially drop-down menus. It didn't feel as native to the Mac as Safari was, but it was really fast. And I really liked Google. I liked the company. I liked the idea of a browser by Google because I'm searching Google every day, all the time. When I'm researching topics, I'm always using Google. So I liked the idea. But there was no Google Chrome for iOS. So I was constantly, you know, emailing myself or messaging myself links to web pages that I wanted to share across my Mac and iPhone and then the iPad. And then Google Chrome for iOS came out, and I was really, really excited because this was happening at the same time that Safari on iOS, the way that I saw it, wasn't getting any better. Safari was always faster than Google Chrome, but I didn't like the kind of iCloud sync that Safari had on iOS 5 and iOS 6. I tried the browser on iOS every time that Apple released a new version, major version of iOS and the betas. And every time I was disappointed to see that iCloud wasn't really reliable, that the browser was fast, but that it wasn't trying really new things. So when Chrome came out on iOS, and when I found out that Chrome had the kind of power user features that could allow me to tinker with the browser and to build workflows for the browser, I was really, really happy. And especially because Google kept updating the app. So they enabled the URL scheme to chain Google Chrome for iOS to other iOS apps. And then they enabled voice search and all kinds of other features that were really, really nice. And I was happy with the Google Sync for the tabs and history and passwords across the iOS and OS X. And for several months, especially last year, 2012, I used Google Chrome as my main browser on any device. And every time that I was forced to open Safari, especially in iOS, because when you tap on links in messages or mail, you cannot go to Google Chrome on iOS. I was really frustrated because I wanted to use Google Chrome everywhere. This year, when Apple released the iOS 7 beta in June, I saw the new Safari, and initially I thought, you know, this is not really, really my thing. I'm not sure that I want to try, even if it's completely new. But then I realized that it was my duty to report to my readers whether Safari was improved or not. So I decided to give it a shot on my iPhone because I didn't install iOS 7 on my iPad. When the beta was released after, you know, a couple of weeks after WWDC. So I installed Safari on my iPhone and I really, really liked it because it was fast. And this is due to the fact that Safari is the only browser on iOS that can use the Nitro JavaScript engine, which is basically, I guess the term would be a just-in-time engine to render JavaScript faster than other browsers. And the difference in practical use is that Safari is basically just faster than Google Chrome or iCab or, I don't know, other browsers that you can see on the App Store. Web pages are rendered faster. Everything loads faster. Scrolling is really, really smooth. And so I was impressed with the new Safari on iOS 7. And when I installed Mavericks on my Mac, and I upgraded to Safari 7 on OS X, I saw that the iCloud Sync was also very much improved from what I remembered. And iCloud Tabs, for instance, they synced in almost real time, even on 3G, which is really awesome to me because I often use two devices at the same time. So, for instance, if I'm building like a workflow, an editorial on the iPad, but I'm using the iPhone to research ideas or maybe, I don't know, I guess to read scripts from other people, I'm using two devices and I really need to be able to open a link, open a tab on my iPhone and have it on the iPad. So iCloud Tabs have been really reliable for me with iOS 7. And I was really pleased to see stuff like the new interface for tabs or the fact that there's a new bookmark menu where it's really visual in the way that it puts favicons right under the address bar. So a series of little touches that I really liked. And so I thought maybe I should also switch completely to Safari on the iPad and see what happens. And at the same time, however, I was growing more and more dissatisfied, I would say, with the creepiness that Google, in my mind, had reached. It was basically a series of factors that I had to consider to when I was switching away from Google Chrome to Safari, but also away from Google as a container of various services. I was a heavy user of Gmail, both for my personal and work accounts. I was using Google Calendar. I was using voice search a lot. I was using Google Maps. So I basically had all these bits of personal information, work information and data and documents and just everything about my online identity, 80% of it was inside Google. And seeing how the company was, you know, this is not a new topic, but I guess that for me, it's been growing more and more in the past year. I don't like the fact that Google hasn't found a way to sustain itself and to be profitable if not for the advertisement, which implies that Google needs me to give it more and more information about myself, about my interests, about my location, about my search queries, about everything that I do online. Google needs it because it needs me to see ads that are targeted to me and precise and contextual and ads that I can click maybe. And I don't like it when maybe I was too slow to realize this, but especially for work stuff, I wasn't comfortable keeping all our emails or our documents in the bucket of a company that has all these pieces in one place, and that can use all the bits of pieces that it gets from the email, from the calendar, from the Google documents, from the browser, and that can algorithmically look at this piece of information and do whatever they want with it. In Google's case, primarily for advertisement, but I guess that I just wanted to control more of my data and more of my information. So at the same time, when I was moving away from Google Chrome and to Safari, I also thought, maybe I should also, you know, start from Gmail and switch to another mail provider. So I looked around a lot for several weeks, and eventually we landed on Rackspace Email, which is gives us a standard IMAP service for email with optional push notifications with Exchange, which is nice, especially on iOS, because with Gmail, unless you use the Google Gmail app, you cannot have push notifications for Gmail. So I was moving away from Chrome and to Safari. I was moving away from from Gmail. I moved away from Google Reader when it closed earlier this year. I think that in general, my conclusion is that I am uncomfortable with the kind of company that Google maybe has always been, but I was too slow to realize that it wasn't really for me. Maybe I've been getting older and I'm just not comfortable with this stuff anymore. I don't know. Maybe it's a sum of all these aspects, but in general, I'm happier with a browser that is made by a company that sustains itself from selling hardware products and services with iTunes. I'm more comfortable owning my own email on a server. And you know, with standard IMAP that I can just give to any email client without, you know, hopefully, unless Mavericks with Mail disagrees with me, hopefully running into issues, so I can own and control my email. With RSS, I'm using FeedWrangler by _David Smith, so I'm trusting a guy that is a good guy, and I'm not trusting a company somewhere which uses my data to target me with advertisements. And maybe it's a little more work because I used to have all my information in one place, controlled by a company that was using crazy algorithms to kind of put it all together and make good use of it. Now I'm using a series of services. And maybe it's a little more work because I have more logins to manage. I have more buckets of data scattered across services. But for me, it's completely worth it because I'm just happier. And as for the browser, which was the starting point, I'm really happy with Safari. It's really fast. I like iCloud Sync a lot, but especially... I love how I can, you know, just the simple things like double tapping to zoom into an article, or maybe use the Safari Reader feature to read articles with a simpler layout, and even a reading list. I'm using reading list to save stuff for later. I used to rely on Instapaper. I still have to catch up on my huge Pocket queue. But, you know, lately I've been using reading lists and it just works for me because maybe I didn't need all the fancy features of a read later application. I mean, I can appreciate nice typography. I'm just not sure that I really, really need it. I'm just fine with reading lists. So, basically, I'm just not comfortable with Google and maybe it's a little more work. Maybe I should have realized this sooner. But in the end, it takes time, especially because after years of giving Google my information, it takes time to migrate. But it's worth it.
So there's, I mean, that you answered a lot of questions I think that we had, and you know, I've done sort of a similar thing. I never used Chrome heavily on iOS, but I did on the Mac for some time, and what pushed me back to Safari. In addition to like the Google stuff was Mavericks. Under Mavericks, Safari just runs so much faster and is way more energy efficient. So you're using Rackspace for work email. I moved my 512 email from Google Apps to Fastmail, and really, again, partially because of like Google stuff, but also like Fastmail is just simpler. It's again straight IMAP, where Gmail has a weird IMAP implementation, which everyone has seen, you know, the ramifications of that in Mavericks. And I'm using iCloud for personal stuff. And I've switched back and forth over the years. I mean, if you know me personally, you probably have my Gmail and my iCloud email address in your phone. But, you know, it's weird, right? Like, a lot of people talk about this, and I actually told the two of you, I was like, the last thing I want to do in this episode is get on here and say, you know, Google is creepy, you shouldn't use them, they're reading your email, because that's not true. I mean, Federico, you said it very well. Like, this is a programmatic approach to learning about its users. It's a free service. It's you know, the Gmail and Google search experiences are ad supported. Where, you know, where iCloud obviously isn't. iCloud makes money because Apple's hardware has healthy margins, and so they subsidize iCloud. And that's a huge difference, right? It's a huge, big different business model. But it's really hard. I mean, I think you said it well. It's really hard to leave Google. It does a lot of things really well. I still use them for search. I stay logged out in Safari of Google. And really, that's more so I don't want to see like the personalization in Google search. A lot of that's with like work-related stuff. And I use it for Google Docs. I mean, we're the three of us are staring at a Google Doc right now. And as we have discussed at length in the past, that there's no real alternative to Google Docs yet. I don't want to reopen that can of worms.
Don't want to take action on that right now.
Take action on that. So Mike, my guess is that you are going to feel differently than... I think you will feel Federico is probably the strongest. Like, yeah, like I'm not in love with Google, but like Gmail is really nice. And like I do miss aspects of it being on iCloud. Although iCloud is nice because it's a single sign-on on your device and you get all your stuff. What about you, Mike? Where do you land on the spectrum?
This continues to be my favorite thing about our show, in that on practically every issue...
We disagree.
We always have varying points, and it tends to be on a sliding scale. I don't know why, but I always seem to come out as lowest common denominator on these scales when compared to the rest of the nerd audience. But I don't care. It does not bother me. I use lots of Google services and I get great use out of them. If that means that they mine my personal information, I'd say let them do it, because they're only serving me back information that I have given them. Like, so they're taking, this is my opinion, they're taking my information and serving me ads based on my information.
Right. Well, I think more importantly, like with Google now, like on Android, if you have
exactly
an email from like US Airways that, hey, you're flying to Memphis, yep, like your phone knows about it. And that stuff is really useful.
I don't care if they're going to use that stuff, if I get a benefit out of it. And it's not just the benefit of the services. When you have all those things tied together, it can be more beneficial to you. Now, I don't get the full benefit because I don't use all Google services for everything. Like, for example, my main email address that I send that sort of stuff to is an iCloud address, because it's what I've used for like 7 years. So it's just my default, you know, blah, 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 at blah, blah, blah. .com email address is, you know, that's the one that I use.
Now I know how to get in touch with you.
I know, right? So that's just the one that I've used. But I use, I do use Gmail. I have a bunch of Gmail accounts, like Google Apps accounts and stuff. I use iCloud for calendar just because it's what I use. But, you know, I use Google Search, and I am extremely dependent on Google Drive for documents. All of the outlines that I do, I have multiple shared spreadsheets with people, friends and coworkers and stuff like that. It's really important to me. But it doesn't, for me, I don't care how invested I am in Google services. It doesn't bother me if they have one shred of information or know my entire web browsing searching history. Like if for example, it came out that Google Chrome was monitoring every single thing that I did, whether I went through Google or not, it wouldn't bother me, and I would continue to use it. Because
so, Mike, I'm sorry, but I have to ask. So, yeah. Would you care if your government spied on you?
So I have a problem with them finding their way into places that I don't expect them to be. So, for example, if I'm using Google Chrome, there's always an expectation that Google's going to know what I'm doing. For me. But for example, a telephone call that I make to my mum, I don't expect Google to listen in on it, same way as I don't expect the government to listen in on it.
Yeah, but technically, your voice is going up in the air, so
yeah, but there's the government. But the government doesn't own the air, Federico, and they don't own my...
What? They own the cell towers.
Well,
but, and the land where the cell towers are located.
But
so
where they may own the towers, they don't own the operator. They don't. There are so many parts in that they don't own. like it's, for example, the Queen owns the entire country. You know, I don't expect her to know everything that happens within it. That's obviously not factually correct. But
so for the same principle, Mike, why should a computer or a series of computers in a data center be able to know everything about you by putting together bits of information that a normal person wouldn't be able to?
The government example I felt like was going to be brought up, and I did actually have I was thinking about this earlier because I thought you'd bring this up. The difference between the GCHQ, which is the British equivalent of the NSA, is that humans are listening to things. And they are making decisions about other humans based on that stuff. And also, the ramifications for their decisions could put me in prison. Google is having computers...
Have you done something that you should go to prison for?
Maybe. I don't know. Sometimes things are a blur. the ramifications of a machine looking at words and then serving ads to me based on those words is nowhere near even close on that scale. They're so far apart. Like, the only thing that connects them is that it is potentially unexpected privacy infringement to some people, because a bunch of people don't understand what they're getting into when they use Google services. Not that Google try and hide it, though. I mean, yes, they do lots of things that are questionable. I appreciate that. And they screw up some stuff as well. Like, you know, everyone remembers the Street View Wi-Fi data problem. They make screw ups like all companies. They fix them, they get fined for them, whatever. But just the areas that they operate in are totally different. If I put things into the internet, I expect them to be seen. Anything that I put into the internet, I expect to be seen by someone. So what
I guess we disagree there, because I'm like the opposite. If I'm putting something on the internet, there shouldn't be an assumption that it could be public.
Well, the reality is, Federico, that you putting things in the internet, like super giant air quotes, isn't really a thing. You are putting information on the company's servers, and I'm not defending or on the side of any particular company in this argument. I'm just saying, like, the idea of the internet is some magical mystery world where you can just do things and there's not ramifications and that it's not accessible to people is completely naive. But
I'm saying that I'm not comfortable with a company that depends on the fact that they should be able to aggregate information of me from various places and put it together and gain a picture of me that any other company wouldn't be able to if they didn't have the kind of resources that they have. So if you go to the Google page for ads, you can see that they have a very... It's likely that they have a very precise profile on you. They know that you're maybe a male between 30 or 28. I don't know how old you are, Steven. Maybe 28 or between 28 and 35 years old. You like, I don't know, I'm guessing that you like indie rock and you like going to the movies and you live in Tennessee. So don't you think that that's kind of creepy?
I have an interest in the anatomy, apparently. So we got that. And urban and hip hop. And office supplies.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at, it's in the show notes, but google.com/settings/u/0/ads.
I get your point, Stephen. I'm not saying that I'm expecting to be able to just type things in the computer and without any server or service knowing. I'm saying that I find it creepy and it just kind of makes me uncomfortable knowing that this company needs me to constantly agree to giving them my information to survive, because they need me to be more open in the sense of privacy, to give me ads that make them money. It's not that I expect Google to completely change. And believe me, I do think that Google does some great stuff, because it's not like I'm some kind of sort of Richard Stallman. I use Google Search, I use Google Maps, I use Google Drive. It's not like I'm completely moving away from Google because, oh God, they are evil, they're going to get me. It's just that if I had to choose between a company like Apple and a company, and not just for the products, I'm talking strictly about privacy and caring about the customer. If I had to choose between Apple and between Google, I know where I'd go, because let's say, okay, let me ask you this. Who's more likely to have, if the government needed a profile on you, who's more likely to be able to have that information already parsed and available between Apple and Google?
Well, Google, because they're collecting it, but
exactly, because they need that information, right? Because they need to be able to have a profile on me about my interests, about my age, about my gender, about what I like or what I don't like. Now, not saying that we should be paranoid and think that the government is out to get us every day, every one of us. I'm just saying that when it comes to my practical need to have my work email and to choose between owning my email with an IMAP server, maybe it's a little bit more of work, and between a company that it's not like there's a human being reading my messages with a magnifying glass. But I'm saying that there's a computer which is scanning messages for keywords and for patterns, right? If I had to choose between the little more work and Google, I made my decision because
But you don't own your email at Rackspace. I don't own my email at Fastmail. Yeah, the difference you're saying is that Fastmail and Rackspace and these other companies, iCloud, Apple, they're not running keywords on your mail to serve you an ad. That's what you're really saying.
Yes, that's my point. It's the fact that they don't need to do that to continue their operation. That's my point.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some alternatives, right? So we've talked about why Federico and I have sort of left some Google services, and I'm definitely in the middle. You know, usually I'm like the stodgy old man in our little
trio. Strange for it to be this way around.
I'm right up the middle this week. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about alternatives. I mean, obviously iCloud for our audience. If you're on all Apple hardware, iCloud's the way to go. And Mike, I couldn't find it, but if you could help me dig up, there are a couple Android apps, at least there used to be, that could sync iCloud contacts and calendars to an Android phone.
Yep, I'll put it in the show notes. I use them.
Right, so you can do iCloud stuff on Android. But you know, I think iCloud is sort of like it's fine for most people. I do wish that the mail server side mail rules were better.
Smooth sync.
But you know, it's working for me. Federico, you mentioned that you guys are using Rackspace for your email, and you use Rackspace for several things for Mac Stories, don't you? Or just email?
Rackspace email with we have 5 mailboxes, and we have the push option, which I think it's $2 for each mailbox per month.
Yeah, so not bad at all. Now, do they offer any sort of calendar or contact syncing at this point?
I think that there's you can choose between various plans for Exchange. I just didn't bother looking because we don't have a shared calendar for Mac Stories.
Okay.
So I just use the iCloud calendar for my personal account.
Okay. Yeah. See, I'm thinking like I'm an individual and I want to use something. Fastmail, which is the mail provider I use for 512, they have said in several blog posts that they are building out CalDAV and CardDAV support.
Which
Google has now. Like, you can actually sync Google contacts to your Mac and to your iOS device without any problem. But they're going to build that out, which really means Fastmail, like, I could use for calendaring and contacts and everything. Right now, I'm using iCloud personally because I still need all that other stuff. You can do hosted Exchange. There are lots of options for that. I think Microsoft has an option now that's pretty cheap. You can provide your own domain name and get like your own Exchange account, which Exchange is great on iOS. It's pretty good on OS X. You get contacts and calendars and everything. Or you can use a system of carrier pigeons and sticky notes, which is what Mike does.
Do you guys use the mail app on OS X?
No.
Yes.
Mike, what do you use? Use Gmail in the website, don't you?
I use Airmail. Are you familiar with the app Airmail?
Yeah, I think I recommended it on the show, which is
the one with Markdown support.
It's proved to be extremely buggy for me, and so I just gave up on it.
Okay, well, I haven't had that problem.
Yeah,
it works very well for me. I don't like the. I've said this before, I think, but I'll say it again. The main reason I dislike the mail app is, like, for example, if I delete one email, it automatically opens and marks as read the next email. I don't like that. And you can with Airmail, there's multiple settings as to how you want that to be managed. So how messages are marked as read when there's a preview window.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to me that you wouldn't automatically mark an email as read just because the preview window opens it. It's not a preview at that point. It's just open.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always infuriated me with Apple Mail. And I like Airmail. It has really good support for Gmail. Not that you'd need that, Federico. But it also supports other stuff pretty well too. So I have my iCloud go through there and stuff like that. And it works perfectly fine. Has, you know, good unified inbox support, good label support. It's a perfectly well suited app. And this is random now, but I've also started using Mailbox again just to try it out. And it's cool. It's fine.
Did I ever tell you guys about my dream mail app for the iPad?
I don't think so.
So basically, it would be it would have the design of Apple's mail app on the iPad, so really clean and simple. But it would have the sharing menu of this patch for the iPhone.
Yep.
Only like built officially into the OS, because this patch right now uses their own sharing mechanism for messages. It would be something built into, I don't know, iOS 8. So it will have snippets like this patch, and it would have the search and smart mailbox feature of MailMate for the Mac. You guys tried it? It's kind of ugly. You know, it's not the best looking application ever made, but it's powerful. It's got all this crazy search and smart mailbox criteria to kind of filter down messages precisely. It's really, really nerdy and good. And I don't think that the app that I'm imagining will ever happen. So, Mike, you should learn how to program, and you should make this app for me.
Okay, Federica.
And I will pay you a lot of England money. I guess it's called pound.
That would be unfortunate for you, but yes, okay, you can pay me in pounds rather than euros.
Or I can pay you with my respect.
Do I not already have that?
No. You can have like a multitude of respects.
So
for many years.
So I use Apple's first party, just the built-in mail client. It works great with iCloud. It works great with my standard IMAP 512 pixels email. I feel like I should mention it because I've talked to some people on Twitter about it. At work, we use Google Apps for everything. And I'm actually using Mailplane, which is basically a wrapper for Gmail that makes it an app. And I use it because I can use my local contacts in it. So I don't keep all my contacts and address book together. They're all in my iCloud account, and it kind of merges those things a little bit. So it's basically using Gmail in the browser. So I archive everything at work. Like I'm very into Gmail at work, but that's not the way I want to use email every day. Like I prefer straight up IMAP with folders and not like some weird archive that may or may not actually exist. Pretty stock over here in my setup.
Hmm.
You know, I really think there should be more email clients for iOS. I know that it sounds boring. Oh, of course, Tichy wants the fancy apps for his iPad, but I mean it. I mean now we have some pretty cool email clients for the iPhone, but for the iPad, nobody's making anything. I don't know why.
Yeah, maybe, strange.
Yeah,
I mean the mailbox one is just Okay.
It's,
like,
you know, it's not. It's nothing revolutionary.
Yeah. It's basically just the iPhone version. It's weird, isn't it? Like, it seems like it would make sense to have a really good email client for the iPad. Like,
I think that's one of the things that, like, not having third-party default apps, I think that really hurts, like, people who think about making a mail app. Like, is mail so integrated into all these other things? Like, you can, in the sharing sheet in iOS, send to mail and, like, you're always kind of dealing with it, account being set up in multiple places. I think that just, like, discourages a lot of people from doing it or from playing with it as a consumer.
Yeah, that's a fair point, because I guess there's most people are just fine with the Apple app. It's just that I want more from it, you know? I know that that's something that will never happen, but I can, you know, all I have is my hope. And nobody's taking away that from me. So my hope this year is to see iOS 8 with some serious inter-app communication features.
Oh, Federico.
So I'm bringing this up again. I know.
You're going to be crushed.
Come on. This year,
it's going to be a bad year for Tichy.
Are you guys sure?
They're never going to do it, man.
I tell you, when that doesn't happen, I will buy you a drink. Because you're
2014 is the year of hope.
Nope.
No.
2014 is the year of fixing iOS 7.
No.
It's so broken.
I mean, of course, yeah, they should fix it. It just shouldn't be iOS 8. You know, Mike, I think that you kind of put a curse on my devices. Because
that was definitely Apple that did that.
No, it was you. Because they are restarting every day, multiple times each day. Uh-huh. This is crazy.
Oh, I know, buddy.
This is crazy, and you were totally right. It's happening more and more with the 5S.
Yeah,
we need to wrap. You into the tip,
Federico? Give us a tip.
Tips of Tichy.
I thought that it would be a nice tip considering last week's episode. So, Mike, you use Ardio, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I remember, you use Ardio.
Yep.
So did you know that you can search for music in the Ardio app without using the search bar?
I did not.
So this is not documented anywhere. I couldn't find documentation from the Ardio website, but the iOS app, so on the iPhone and iPad, supports a URL scheme that lets you search from, I don't know, Launch Center Pro or maybe Drafts. You can use this simple URL scheme, which is audio, / search, the really basic one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set up an action in Launch Center Pro. They have built-in support for audio. So it's if you open the Action Composer, you will find the audio icon. And you can just search for anything you want. Maybe it's an artist name, maybe it's a song, an album, or a playlist, whatever. You just search. Open audio, and you will be taken directly to search with the search results, which is handy because in the audio app, and especially on the iPhone, which has a smaller screen, if you are navigating from search result to an artist, and then from an artist you go to, I don't know, maybe an album, and then from an album you go to a song, it can be pretty annoying to, you know, to go back in navigation, or maybe just have, or maybe even having to, you know, to swipe to show the sidebar and then scrolling up and selecting the search bar. It's just too many taps, and we don't want too many taps, right? We want to be geeks with the nice shortcuts. So if you want to have a shortcut in your dock for audio search, I just keep calling it radio. I don't know why. It just sounds better. They should add an A. 2014 should be the year of A's in audio. But anyway, if you want, you can search using a URL scheme. And if you want to go crazy, Mike, so here's the advanced version of a tip. Here's the longer tip.
There we go.
Jesus Christ. If you want, and maybe I will put this together for you. You can build a JavaScript bookmarklet. So listen carefully, Mike.
Okay.
And everybody else. On the iPad, on the iPad, you can, with JavaScript in Safari, you can pass the currently selected text from a web page to another app using JavaScript and a URL scheme. So in theory, you should be able to, I don't know, maybe you're reading NME, right? Mm-hmm. In the UK?
Yep.
I used to have a subscription to the magazine, you know?
I just subscribed again in Newsstand.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, do you have a Newsstand thing?
They do.
So maybe you're reading the NME website and you read about a new band. So in theory, you should be able to select the artist's name on the iPad. So provided that you have the bookmarks bar shown and that you have a bookmarklet, you could just send the artist's name from Safari to Audio and start listening.
Hmm.
Without copying and pasting anything. You just select, hit the button, you search in radio, you choose a song or whatever, and you find it, and it starts playing. So I haven't built this bookmarklet myself, but it should be pretty easy to do. So I will do it for you, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you, Federico. And thank you for giving us a teachy tip this week. The triumphant return. So that is it for this week's episode of The Prompt, our first episode of 2014. I hope that you have enjoyed it as much as we have enjoyed recording it. And we'll be back, of course, next week. If you'd like to get in touch with us, there's a few ways you can do that. Right now, if you go to 5by5.tv/prompt and just hit the contact button, which is right at the very top in our masthead, it will send an email to us. You can now send emails to us if you would really like to, but we do prefer Twitter because it's easier for us to read and link to and stuff like that. So you can get us on Twitter in a multitude of ways. You can contact @_theprompt. To get in contact with us there. You can find me. I am @iMike. Stephen is @ISMH. And Federico is @Vitici, VITICCI. You can find Federico's work at maxstories.net and Stephen at 512pixels.net. And if you want to hear more podcasts that I do, go to 5by5.tv. There's lots. That I'm on lots of shows. So that is it for this week's episode of The Prompt. Again, show notes at 5by5.tv/prompt/29. We'll be back next week. Until then, say goodbye, everybody.
Arrivederci.
Adios.